I've never felt more like a stranger than right when I first moved to England. At the time, I was living in a hostel near King's Cross in London while searching for a job. I had moved there the year that the second President Bush was re-elected. So when most people found out I was an American, the next thing outside of their mouths would be, "How could you people have voted for him again?" In fact, I hadn't voted for him either time, but that didn't seem to matter. They didn't seem interested in getting to know me. They only seemed interested in their own projections of who I was because of where I happened to be born. Perhaps you've had a similar experience. Maybe it didn't have to be with being an American. Maybe it had to do with a different part of your identity. Whether it was your accent, your skin color, the fact that you are or aren't married, your gender or sexual identity, your hair covering or your hair itself, or even your taste in music or clothes, people sometimes say some pretty awful things when they assume they know what those things mean to us or mean about us. Though the details might be very different, I imagine all of us have felt misunderstood and alone, either in this way or another, at some time in our lives. Parish ministry is a strange, wonderful, and at times difficult vocation. Some of the hardest experiences I've ever had as a minister have been trying to minister to people who have been made to feel unwelcome in our congregations. I've heard countless stories from people who wound up never going back to a UU church because they were made to feel judged, scrutinized, or misunderstood, but not because they behaved disruptively or broke our covenant. They were made to feel unwelcome for the same sort of reason I was in England, the same sort of reason so many of us have been made to feel alone and misunderstood. Many of the stories I've heard are rooted in assumptions made about a stranger's theology. A visitor to a congregation I served a few years ago came to my office in tears because a church member had chastised her for making the sign of the cross before the prayer during the service. Rather than asking the stranger what that gesture meant to her, the church member assumed it meant that visitor didn't belong in that church. Rather than being invited to share about something precious to her, this newcomer left feeling judged and alone because of a faulty assumption. At a different congregation, I had more than one person of color come to share how upsetting it was when white church members asked where they were from. Not satisfied with the name of the local town where they lived, these white members would press on, "No, where are you really from?" It was heartbreaking to have to reassure them that they need not justify their existence in this country, let alone this church, to anyone. And it was frustrating not to know how to address this kind of thing with the congregation. I think that's why these unwelcoming aspects of dominant culture are so hard to get rid of. Because they are hard to talk about and hard to address directly. Because our culture has trained us to meet this kind of truth-telling not with curious humility, but with shame. In a different part of the essay that this morning's reading comes from, Reverend Lilia Cuervo has this to say about these kinds of faulty assumptions. "We UUs claim to detest dogma, yet we are capable of acting and speaking in a self-righteous and chastising manner. In this church, we don't wear that, usually a cross, or say the G word or like pagan rituals." Not true in this church. "This is especially hurtful to seek to seekers of color who come to us searching for a liberal faith, but who still treasure some of the symbols and rituals of their native faiths. All of us have triggers of some kind, words or symbols or gestures that remind us of some terrible hurt or rejection or bad experience we've had. And when other people do or wear or say or look like these things, it can be hard not to just throw up our defenses and assume those things mean what we think they mean. And yet, as a congregation, it is our calling to welcome people seeking liberal religious community. It is our job, every single one of us, to do right, not just by our visitors, but by every single person here. We're each called to take responsibility for whatever we need to do inside of our own hearts and minds to widen our welcome. Each and every one of us, not just Lonnie, not just Paul, not just the pastoral associates or the ministers, are responsible for making sure that everyone among us feels welcome and understood and appreciated and connected. This is what it means to share the ministry of a congregation. Kat Hussein Liu, a member of First Unitarian in San Francisco, just across the water, writes about another way that assumptions sometimes limit the connections people can make with us. In this excerpt, she's writing about the ways that liberals sometimes exclude and alienate people whom they might otherwise connect with as allies in fighting injustice and oppression. She writes, "We have conflated different things, justice and cultural preferences. There is the true fight for equity and justice that those who are marginalized know we need to fight. Opposing racism, sexism, cis-heteroism, ableism, religious bigotry, economic inequality, the robbing of the birthright of future generations, these things need to be fought. And then there is the anti-gun, anti-NASCAR, anti-football, anti-fast food, anti-network TV, anti-Disney, anti-anything that is mainstream popular culture. I've lost count of the number of times I've heard someone say that they don't own a TV in a self-satisfactory tone. No, I'm not claiming that you have to like these things if you don't. That would be fake. But disliking NASCAR or Disney does not make us better people than those who like them." These kinds of assumptions, these kinds of judgments and purity tests for who is liberal or progressive or green or you enough, represent some of the most harmful parts of who liberal religious communities can be. But thankfully, neither we nor our communities are wholly defined by who we can be at our worst. Am I right? Yeah. Hospitality is possible, even where a welcome hasn't been possible before. Though I felt isolated and misunderstood at the beginning of my 6 months in England, a few weeks later, I began having some of the most welcoming experiences of my life. I had never been away from home for Thanksgiving before, let alone in a country that didn't even celebrate it. So you can imagine how moved I was when my Irish and English housemates surprised me with a roasted goose dinner when I got home from work on the night of Thanksgiving. And even though it was a goose instead of a turkey, they had gone out of their way to honor my traditions in a respectful way and make me feel welcome and appreciated. And even though there are many people like me who have grown up in this tradition who are native UUs, our faith also has a lot of immigrants, as Lilia Cuervo put it. Many people come to our churches seeking a faith open enough not just for part of themselves, but for the fullness of who they are. I've heard lots of people in this room testify to how this church has become a place where they feel welcomed, where they feel loved and celebrated. During the mission and vision conversations we had earlier this month, one just last Sunday, Some of our gay and lesbian members shared how moving it was several years ago when this congregation phone banked around the clock in order to defeat Proposition 8, which had barred same-sex marriage. I heard many of you share how moving it was to see straight people in this church fight hard to defeat this hateful law. I heard people say, "It felt like this church had my back." That's exactly what we should be working toward with everyone who comes to us seeking liberal religious community. That sense of feeling understood and valued, that feeling that in this community we don't have to go it alone. That should be our goal for every single person who walks through our doors. This should be our goal, whether the visitor comes to us from Kensington or Richmond, whether they wear a flaming chalice, a head covering, a Thor's hammer pendant, or a cross around their necks. Whatever their race or ethnicity, whether they are an atheist, a pagan, a Buddhist, or a Christian, whatever their gender or sexual orientation, whether they prefer to sit quietly throughout the service or get up and dance and clap along with their favorite hymns, whether their baby sleeps in its carrier through the service or babbles impatiently during the sometimes not so silent meditation. As a covenantal faith, a faith based on the promises that we make to each other, the only thing that would make someone welcome among us is if their behavior violates our covenant. While not all actions have inherent worth and dignity, all people do. While we don't welcome all behavior, we do welcome all people. Nothing about a person's theology, background, profession, appearance, culture, ethnicity, or anything else disqualifies them from being welcome among us. I think, perhaps, the hardest thing about hospitality is how much it is not about us. When we are the host, when we are the one doing the welcoming, it's not really about us anymore. It's about the other person. It can be hard to set aside our own likes and dislikes, our own assumptions about what certain words and symbols mean, and to greet someone we don't know with openness and warmth. It feels risky, because to truly welcome another person, we must first take ourselves out of the center of things. Only then is there room to put the stranger, the poor, the newcomer, the immigrant at the center for a while. And if we don't feel like we are having our own needs met, it can be even harder to decenter ourselves. That's just one reason why this congregation offers so many opportunities for people to connect in deep ways that minister to our own personal and inner needs. And it's also one of the reasons we encourage people to develop spiritual or inner practices that feed their spirits and their hearts. But at some point, we are called to take the focus off of our own needs from time to time so that we can minister to the needs of others. That's what spiritual maturity is about. It's about growing up. It's about taking responsibility for our own inner well-being and learning how to welcome and minister to those who are different from us, those who, for whatever reason, need some extra tenderness, a warmer welcome, a deeper acceptance, because no one should have to travel through life always a stranger. Church invites us all in as guests, as students, as people receiving ministry. But the beautiful thing about this kind of shared religious life is how it challenges us in our own time to shift roles and become hosts to new guests, teachers to new students, ministers to one another. It's a good thing, too, because I imagine many of us are here because of the willingness of another person to put us first, our experience in the center of things for a while. I can think of nothing more urgent, nothing more important or meaningful in the times in which we live than building a deeper, stronger, more welcoming liberal religious community. May we be blessed and be a blessing in living out this work to which we are all called as parts of this living, breathing congregation. Amen.